On this show, we regularly feature expert guests discussing the multifaceted ways our society and our faith traditions have betrayed non-white, non-Christian Americans. The diagnoses are painful and plentiful. Prescriptions, however, can be harder to come by. That's why spending time with Ted Johnson's recent book, When the Stars Begin to Fall, Overcoming Racism and Renewing the Promise of America, has been so rewarding. While unflinching in acknowledging the problems, the author offers insightful solutions. And I am happy to welcome Dr. Johnson to State of Belief Radio today. Ted, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Really, really glad to be here.
The points you make in this book are deceptively simple, but I read you as saying nothing less than the survival of our nation is at stake.
So we know from the history of our country that the only time it has actually been broken into was over the question of Black people in America. Even in those moments when we've had tremendous national unity and national pride, for example, after World War II, or during World War II, rather, and after 9/11, in those moments, we also interned Japanese Americans. We also saw a rise in hate crimes against Americans who were Muslims or who worshiped at mosques. So even in those moments that where we try to save the Republic, where we try to bring the Union back together, or when we express a lot of national pride, it is race and racism that still permeates that national unity. And so either we address this racism head on and try to appeal to the ideals of America that I think we all hold dear, or we will lose our democracy to the color line, to the way that racism divides us and splits us and causes us to see us as enemies instead of as fellow citizens.
Do you think most people understand that it is that crucial a matter?
I don't. I don't think people believe that racism is the thing that will undermine our country. And it's mostly because the kind of racism that exists in today's society is unlike the kind that existed in America 200 years ago, 300 years ago, even before the country was founded. And so because the racism we see today is not explicit, isn't as hateful or as violent as it has been in decades past, it's and because we've done things like we have a Black president, we have had a Black vice president, it seems like we have overcome the hardest part of racism. Mm. Well, the hardest part of racism isn't the violence, even though that was terrible, and isn't slavery, even though that was horrible. The hardest part is when we have a feeling that we have reached equality, and then the way our society is structured causes people from certain class backgrounds, certain racial and ethnic backgrounds, to have less of an opportunity to reach the American dream, to touch the American promise, and are being told that the reason they aren't doing so is because there's something broken with them. Mm-hmm. This is a much more insidious kind of racism that fosters division and prevents us from coming together over the more unifying kind of events that hit our conscience more. Mm-hmm. When there's something like a very violent act or a national disaster. This slow boil of racism is harder to detect, but just as deadly to the nation.
Mm. What are the ways in which structural racism becoming less visible, overt, actually makes it harder to challenge and easier to deny?
Yeah, and it's because, you know, when structural racism is working, everything around us appears to be in order. And then the way we can detect that something is foul is when we look at the outcomes of people who are similarly situated. If we take a person, two people of two different races who have the same education, work just as hard, and end up in very different spots in life in terms of income and health, et cetera, then that suggests that there's not something broken with the person necessarily, but maybe there was something about their path in our society that caused them their paths to diverge. In the same way that you may feel fine And it isn't until you put on the blood pressure monitor that you recognize maybe I should go see a doctor because my levels are high. Mm. Structural racism works in much the similar way. Mm-hmm. And so the way we can detect it is when we look at how groups are performing in our nation and see these wide disparities across a number of factors, not just wealth, but health, education, housing, you name a socioeconomic factor, and there is a racial gap there. That suggests that there's something in our society that's not working right for one group of people. Either that is true, or you believe that group of people are inherently inferior, less capable of achievement, less American, and less hardworking. And that introduces a whole other set of problems if that's what you believe about a whole group of people that comprise 13% of the country.
You make such a compelling case that the issue of race undermines the very foundations of our nation. Talk a little bit more about that, if you will.
Right. So the promise of America is captured in the first three or four lines of the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, where it says that all men are created equal, that we have unalienable rights, including among these life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that government derives its just powers from the consent of the governed. So we believe in equality. We believe in that there are certain rights that are inherent to us being human, life, our liberty, and our ability to pursue opportunity and prosper, and that our government works for us and not the other way around. Mm. And so if racism undermines those promises, then racism is a threat to the American idea. Now, the United States has shown as a geopolitical nation state, this entity, that it can live comfortably with racism in its veins, and not just against Black people, but against white immigrants from different parts of Europe, to include Ireland and Italy at times, Native Americans, immigrants from other parts of the world. It's even denied women the right to vote and own property at times. So the United States as an entity can be okay with equality, but the American ideal, the principles that this nation was founded on cannot coexist with this kind of inequality. And nothing exposes the depth of the inequality, its resilience to activism and legislative reform. Nothing does that as well as racism does. And so racism is the thing we must attack. Mm-hmm. If we do that, we will not only address racial inequalities, but also economic inequalities. And again, a range of issues around schools and housing and health as well. So this is the thing that can prevent the delivery of the promise of America to all of us, racism. And it is also the thing that if we were able to mitigate its effects, will allow more of the promise to reach more of us.
There's a common attitude on the part of activists that at this point in our history, denial of contemporary racism, individual or collective, has to be deliberate, that nobody can possibly remain genuinely blind to it. But you take a more merciful tone to this sensitive question, and I'd like for you to say why.
Yeah. Well, so I believe that the kind of racism that threatens America is not the kind that a person may harbor in their hearts, but rather the kind that creates disparity in a society. And so I don't think the problem is between white people and Black people. I think the problem is that our nation was constructed at a time when there was tremendous racial inequality, and the policies and the legal documents and the laws and statutes and regulations, most of these things were crafted, and certainly their foundation rests in a period where racial inequality was acceptable. And then during the course of the 20th century, Americans decided maybe we should go in a different direction. Maybe the way we've been handling this race problem isn't good. So between President Truman's desegregation of the military, through Brown v. Board, which the Supreme Court said separate but equal is not constitutional, through the Civil Rights Act of 64, the Voting Rights Act of 65, Fair Housing Act of 68, we made a major transformation in this country that moved us much closer to being the nation of our professed ideals. The problem is when we pass those laws to say that racial inequality is unconstitutional, it's not acceptable, we didn't update all of the structures that had been built in the 200 years of history prior to this major civil rights transformation. And so now we have declared ourselves equal, but we have not equalized the structures that determine how people live their lives, where they live, what kind of jobs they get, how much they are paid fairly or not, education opportunities, again, preventative health, et cetera. And so we have a society that inherently puts people on a different path depending on where they're born and the color of their skin, not because there's hatred in other people's hearts for these folks, but because we've not sufficiently updated our society, our democracy, the structures of our society to allow people to earn what they work for based on the sweat of their brow instead of being punished or being their hill to climb toward the American dream being unfairly and unjustly steeper than others simply because of the color of their skin.
Ted, you have such a broad background working at high levels in the military, the White House, business, and academia. Where in these different worlds do you see an understanding of the race problems that you identify, and where do you see more denial?
The denial I see in really in everyday life. There's a general unwillingness, and this isn't specific to any party or any ideology in terms of conservative or liberal, but people are generally unwilling to extend themselves for people who are different than them. All of the research suggests that our social circles are filled with people who are the same race as us more times than not, the same class as us more times than not. And we don't have an introduction to people who are different from us. And so when our leaders come to us and say, the reason your life isn't working out the way you thought is because those people over there are hogging the resources, or those people over there are a drag on the economy or the school district or whatever, we're not resilient to those appeals because we don't know people from those groups that give us evidence, a lived experience that those things aren't accurate or certainly don't define the entire group. But I will say that growing up, I grew up in Raleigh, North Carolina, one of a few Black families in a white suburb. And I saw firsthand there that the kind of racism, again, that is troubling America is not the kind where people in two different groups don't get along because of the color of their skin. That was a problem a century ago, 60, 70 years ago. Now it's I made it, why can't you? And without a recognition that everyone's path is not built based on the sweat of their brow alone, that some paths are easier than others. And the last thing I'll say on this, though, is the hope I have for our country and our ability to get past this, I found in my military service of over 20 years, and frankly, in the church that I grew up in, there was a lot of optimism and faith in the Black Baptist Church, the Southern Baptist Church that I grew up in. And there was a lot of exposure to Americans who are different from you in region, class, ethnicity, religion, language even. And we managed to find ways to work together to form bonds of friendship because we were serving a higher purpose, which was this country and certainly in church, which was the God above. So it's between these two things, it shows we have the capacity to be better than we are. The question is whether or not we have the will.
You know, this kind of conversation eventually always reaches the question of motivation. How can those who deny and benefit from structural racism come to see how important it is to shatter those structures, that there is immense benefit to themselves in that happening? Because I'm afraid for many people of privilege, self-interest is the sole motivator.
This is the hard question. What those who want to divide us are very good at doing is pointing to the things we wish we had in our life and blaming other people because we don't have those things. And as long as that's the overriding philosophy or ideology or the basis of one's appeal, then it always looks like we are harmed by the presence of others instead of pointing to the ways we could all be helped if those the least among us or those that are marginalized are allowed to compete fairly in the country. And so there are a number of studies that show a fairer housing market, a fairer school district zoning, fairer housing policy, fairer tax structure, how all these things will help everyone. But when we're in a society that has a hierarchy already embedded in it, those who are benefiting from the status quo will see the promotion of those at the bottom of the hierarchy as a demotion for them, because relative to others in society, the leveling feels like their status is being taken from them. And while that may be a psychological, social kind of loss, it is felt real. It feels real, just as if someone was taking your house or has taken your job. And so the path forward is twofold. One, it is necessary to point out how, for example, how having different healthcare policy will allow all of us to have better health outcomes at a cheaper rate, instead of having a healthcare policy that sort of excludes large portions of the country and only caters to a few with the kind of healthcare and coverage that will allow them to live healthy lives. Mm-hmm. If everyone now has access to that same healthcare package and things, people's doctors may be busier, the hospitals, you know, harder to get appointments. And it may feel like now that everyone has access to this resource, my desires have been pushed back and demoted, when in fact a healthier society helps all of us, because ultimately it leads to not only longer lives, but at a lower cost. That's the material piece. But there's another piece of this. If you truly believe in the promise of America, that we're all created equal, that we have an equal opportunity to pursue our dreams and should be rewarded for our hard work, and if you believe that government should be responsive to us and not to those with lots of resources, then there's an idealistic appeal to getting rid of racism so that we can all enjoy the America we believe in, and more importantly, leave it to the next generation and leave it to posterity, a better nation than the one we inherited.
What role and responsibility do faith institutions have in the healing that will do what you want done?
Yeah. So I think it's twofold. One, faith institutions should bring people of dissimilar lives together. They should allow people to worship together of different races and national origin and gender and et cetera, and help us meet one another and recognize the similarities that we have in each other. And the other thing is to recognize whatever your kind of faith is, whatever faith you practice, all of them have a version of the golden rule, which is basically to love your neighbor like you love yourself. A good patriot is someone who practices the civic version of the golden rule, that looks out for their fellow citizens, their neighbors, when it comes to our democracy and when it comes to justice, just as you would as if they were your brother or sister in your chosen faith. If we can extend that, it's difficult, but if we can do that, then we will create a nation that the world's not yet seen.
What's a final word on this topic?
There's actually two. It's faith and compassion. Faith that we can achieve the thing that this nation has set out to do, as imperfect as it is, and that it will require compassion for our fellow brothers and sisters in this country if we're going to make it happen. Without those two things, then the future of the country is not the kind of thing that we want to be our the mark that we leave for history.
Theodore Johnson is director of the Fellows Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. His background includes service at high levels in the U.S. Navy, the White House, and the Pentagon. Dr. Johnson's recent book is titled When the Stars Begin to Fall, Overcoming Racism and Renewing the Promise of America. Ted, I hope there are lots of people who read, understand, and take to their hearts what you have written about so well. Great thanks to you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much.